Talk 1600. You're catching the drift. Conservative talk. Intelligent conversations on local, state, and national issues with Gary Wellings, chief editor of the Current newspaper and Current Online. Join in the conversation at 734-822-1600. And now, your host, Gary Wellings.
And good Saturday afternoon. Joining me in studio, Brandon Drake.
Hello there.
And today on The Drift, we have a special guest star, Senator Patrick Kolbeck.
Hey, great to be with you guys.
Yeah, it's great to have you in. We're gonna talk a little bit about Prop 1 and let people know that this is not one of the good ones. So, but before we do that, let's take care of a little business. Our sponsor this half hour is, J&M Landscaping, LLC, 248-640-7029. Or you can go to J_M_landscaping@yahoo.com. Now, J&M Landscaping doesn't just do your landscape and your sprinkler system. They do a lot of tree services, trees and stump removal, trimming and pruning, ornamental pruning, as well as all your typical lawn care services. Now, with the spring storms coming, you want to get those dead trees down. You want to get the dead branches out. Call J&M Landscaping, 248-640-7029. And get that done. You got to get that taken care of. So 248-640-7029. Jason will take care of you. He's a good guy. All right. So, Senator Patrick. I always think of Patrick and SpongeBob, but no. All right. So Prop 1, we talked about a little bit last week, and I'm going to talk about a little bit on the show, I think, for the next 6 weeks, 8 weeks, whatever we got left, because I want people to be completely aware of what's going on. You, give us the rundown. Why is it so bad?
Well, maybe to clean up on your SpongeBob analysis here or analogy, we'll try to clean up misconceptions around 15-1 and what they're talking about in regards to other alternatives. So first, let's kind of frame what 15-1 actually does. On May 5th, voters are going to be asked whether or not they're going to authorize an increase in the state sales tax from 6% to 7%. When they do that, it automatically enacts about 10 pieces of legislation that are connected to the passage of that sales tax increase. And those pieces of legislation include things like vehicle registration fee increases, a gas tax swap on our flat tax with a wholesale tax, which will be indexed inflation, and a lot of other items along those lines. There might be some good things in there as well, things like competition on projects for road projects and warranties. But when it's all said and done in the final analysis, it results in about a $1.7 billion increase in taxes in year one. And when you get out to year three, it's about a $2 billion tax increase. And in that year one, in the year one figures, where that money actually goes is only about 25% of it actually goes to fixing the roads. And I think that's what a lot of people have issues with this ballot proposal, is that out of $1.7 billion raised in that year one, only $434 million actually goes to fix the roads. Another $800 million goes towards paying down our bond debt on the on road construction, which is a good thing on the surface. But if you're starting to look at, against the backdrop of TV commercials that are talking about concrete falling on people driving under underpasses, I mean, you know, from a safety perspective, you'd kind of think that it's more important to fix the roads than it is to go off and pay down the debt. So,
does that small percentage spent in year one on roads stay the same throughout year two and year three?
It goes up to over 60% in year three. So we're up over almost $1.3 billion in year three. And the magic number that we're looking at to keep the roads from degrading any further is about a $1.2 billion increase in the roads, and that assumes that we don't find better ways to fix the roads that actually lower the cost of fixing the roads, which is something I want to go into as regards to some of the alternatives that we have before us. But so in the final analysis, we've got a case here where we're increasing, we're starting off increasing our taxes by $1.7 billion in year one, up to about $2 billion steady state increase in revenue for the state. And The basic question that I like to propose is, who should be pinching their pennies? Should it be the taxpayers or should it be the government? And I'm a big believer that tax increases should always be the last solution. And too often up in Lansing, and especially up in D.C., it's always the first solution. So we could talk about some of the alternatives that I think are out there.
Well, that's, That's the difference between you, and there's some other politicians I like, but you know what? You're the only guy, and I think that's why you're so loved at this station. You're the only guy who still believes that after you've been elected and now reelected, you're still toting that line of make government suffer the way the rest of us have suffered. Yeah. Every other politician is... The fact that we have a Republican House and Senate and governor and they're jacking us for tax increases is driving me insane. I want to explode every week when I'm on
it. On a continuous basis,
yes.
Tax increases. This isn't the first time with this administration, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just nonstop.
I mean, does it feel, when you go to work in Lansing, do you ever feel like you're surrounded by Democrats with why they've got R's behind their name is just beyond me?
I've made some pretty poignant floor speeches, just highlighting, guys, who do we really serve? When we get elected into office, and there's a lot of folks that like to open doors for us and take us out to lunch and dinner and all those good stuff. Those aren't the ones who we're serving. We're serving the folks who got us elected into office, and we constantly need to have that recalibration. And there's some good people out there in the lobbyist community. I want to just throw a broad brush disparagement of it, but it ultimately comes down to a decision that's got to be made on the part of the legislature, and I want to make sure that we start reprioritizing what's going on in the pocketbooks of our constituents.
You know what I would like to see? A little off base. I would love to see a law passed that makes every lobbyist, while they are working, whether it's 8, 10, or 12 hours a day, have to wear a vest with a big red L on it. You know, just like the adulterer, the lobbyist, so that anyone that's seen with him knows who he is and what's going on. That guy is getting bought off over there right now.
Look, I like up. That.
Huh?
We know who they are.
Shame them. Shame.
And it'd be kind of like when Mao made the, certain people wear the dunce caps during the Cultural Revolution.
You know, there's a value, especially with term limits, and which I'm a big proponent of. You need folks that are subject matter experts on particular, subjects. So I think there is a role. The key comes into when they convert that role from being a subject matter expert into being the main reason why somebody votes in a certain way. That's right. When things get skewed the wrong way. And kind of along those lines, I mean, it's somewhat related to this. I've got a case here where we've got some of the organizations that are putting money towards the Safe Road Yes or the Safe Roads Now campaign. We've got Michigan Township Association, which put in $100,000 into this campaign. And the money that they put into this campaign actually comes directly from the taxpayers. So those dues for the townships are actually being paid for with tax dollars. So essentially, our own tax dollars are being used to lobby us to pay more tax dollars.
Yeah.
And I have a problem with that.
Yeah, I do too.
And so part of the reason is if we go into the breakdown on Proposal 1, we talked about only 25% of the money in year one actually goes to fixing the roads. And we talked about $800 million going towards road bonds. Well, going on down the list, $106 million in change actually goes to local units of government. So that's why organizations like the Michigan Township Association are rolling the dice and say, let's see, I'm going to spend $100,000 with the hope of $106 million payoff.
Right.
Right.
Well, payoff. And that's a good return for them.
It is a very good return. And obviously the road construction industry is placing their bets too, and they're putting in about $2.3 million at last figure into that to get a almost $2 billion payoff. So there are people that are doing the calculus on this to see, hey, when's it in best interest? But I think it's important for voters to understand. And then when we start looking at, well, who's on the other side? And this is a position that I've talked about for 3 years. When we're talking about putting a ballot proposal out to ask our citizens to go off and raise taxes, who is their advocate? Who is going to throw in money to say, don't give me money, right? It's a very difficult you don't have organizations. There's very few, a handful of organizations that would actually do this. And you got groups like Americans for Prosperity, and you got groups like Concerned Taxpayers, and they're making a big case for this right now. But these are just private citizens going off and trying to pull resources from people and scrounging for it, going against a juggernaut of folks that have a dedicated funding stream to go off and pay for this mass marketing to try to convince people to give up more of the money in their wallet.
Okay. Now, let's talk a little bit about how the education system is going to profit in my book, because I posted something on my Facebook page this morning about public school growth. Since 1950 to 2009, student increase has been about 96% since 1950. The increase in teachers has been 252%. The increase in non-teaching staff administration, 702%.
Yeah.
Now, we keep spending more and more money on our schools, but getting less and less out of it. I mean, I hate to say this, but kids today are nowhere near as smart as we were. And I don't mean that trying to pat ourselves on the back.
It seems true.
The kids today do not know what we knew at that same age. I believe it's going downhill. So how is the school system getting an opportunity out of this proposal
work? Well, school systems get an extra $300 million in year one and increases every year up to, you know, year three. And so, and in addition to that, in order to pass this legislation in the first place, the Republican-led legislature actually swapped out a bill of mine that would actually have encouraged us to know more about our civics responsibility. So I had a bill that encouraged instruction in the Declaration of Independence and Constitution, and it was swapped out with a bill that says we're going to go off and do a study on how much we should be paying per kids for education in our education system. And this is dangerous. It was a Brandon Dillon bill, which is a Democrat from west side of the state, was used to swap out a bill from a Republican to go off and get the necessary votes. And this bill is dangerous because it's essentially going to be used as fodder for court cases whenever the legislature does not increase education spending to the desires of the education community. We'll be dragged into a court of law to go off and force a increase in that spending taken away from other priorities that we may have in the budget.
Right. Now, this kind of bothered me, too. We heard that the state school board hired the new state superintendent, mm-hmm. right? And of the three guys that were running, the one that won just happened to be the school lobbyist for Bloomfield Hills. Mm-hmm. Correct me if I'm wrong. Somebody can call in 734-822-1600. But I can't believe a school district has its own lobbyist. Bloomfield Hills obviously is one of the richer school districts. I know Whitmore Lake Schools does not have its own lobbyists, and I'm not sure about Ann Arbor, but how the heck do they have the money to hire a school lobbyist when they complain about too many kids in a class?
Well, you're asking a pretty fundamental question as to where is that money going? And when you look at organizations like MEA, you got the American Federation of Teachers, you've got Michigan Association of School Administrators, you've got School Board Association lobbyists, and you've got Wayne County RESA has their own lobbyists. All these organizations across the board have quite a few lobbyists, and when you count up the number of public school districts that we have in the state of Michigan, it's 551, I think, at last count. That adds up to a lot of money that's taken out of the system. So I've actually did a study a while back that said that if we were to consolidate all the school districts, there's about 262 of them that have 1,500 or fewer students into larger school districts, and you cut out all the administration associated with that, I think you free up about $1,700 per pupil just by doing that.
Yeah.
Remember the state school superintendent Mike Flanagan's quote of every school teacher in Michigan should make at least $100,000 a year? That was that mentality of, we want to retain talent,
I'm going to go back to teaching if that's the case.
That mentality, I think, is still pervasive among those lobbying groups, right?
Well, yeah. I'll put this get down to the brass tacks. I had a representative of the Wayne County MEA rep about 3 years ago when we were talking about teacher tenure reform. She actually testified in front of the Education Policy Committee that I'm a member of. And said that I'll admit it, I'm in it for the money, and I couldn't believe what I heard, and it was I thought we were supposed to be focused on educating our students and making sure that we're developing good citizens. That's the purpose of education, but just like with the roads, frankly, there's folks that view it as a jobs program, and we got to start focusing on what the outcomes are and making sure that we're getting good quality for the significant investment we're putting in. I mean, our education budget is, when you look at all the money we spend on education, is right up there with healthcare in the state budget. And I mean, it's on the order of over $12 billion, $13 billion a year. We need to be focused on making sure we're getting good value out of
it. What do you gentlemen say to the teachers, and I've experienced this a lot, where when they start whining about their pay, and they think they should make a six-figure income before benefits and health and retirement, that, well, I have a master's degree. How do you respond to, I know how I respond to that, but how do you gentlemen respond
well,
to this,
I know
whole,
how I
this
respond
entitlement
to
mentality of I have a master's degree, so therefore I deserve way more money than you are making.
Yeah. After being in the workforce for 10 years after graduating college, I went back for my master's at Wayne State, and after my fifth math class, it was a quadratic whatever class, I said, I'm not learning anything. You're sucking up my money, and I'm not getting a thing. I quit. I didn't finish my master's because, you know what? I didn't need a useless piece of paper from another overpriced university. And I just, I'm done with it. So when people say, oh, I've got a master's, I'm like, big deal.
Exactly.
What are you, an archaeologist? Go read King Tut's tomb or something. Maybe that's important.
Go to Barnes & Noble, get your coffee from the race-talking barista, and go read for a while with your master's degree. Fine. But we're not paying you for that.
Yeah. Patrick?
Yeah, personally, I'd like to see some of the folks who've been out in the field working in a particular subject area go off and have a short track into getting into the teaching profession so that we can get people who've actually worked in that field going off and instructing our kids.
Yeah. And fields that are in demand and that are useful for getting a job and for our country, right? Not just some of these useless degrees where I have a master's in this or that, and therefore I deserve $100,000 because you, the taxpayer, are stupid enough and being manipulated and exploited enough that you'll pay me that.
Right. We got to get out of this check-the-box mentality associated with degrees. It's got to be more focused on what value you're going to be providing to prospective employers.
Yeah. The other thing that bothered me about college education, too, was, you know, I went to pick up a second minor in finance. And after taking several of those classes, my college counselor said, oh, by the way, you have to have X percent of general ed, so you can't graduate this spring. Yeah. You're going to have to wait until fall and take five more elective credits of crap. You know, and I was like, you know what? Screw you. I said, I'm not going for the extra minor. You're not getting that money out of me, too. And I was done with it. I graduated in the spring.
Those professors were always lobbying for their particular department that, oh, you need to do this and do that and spend more money with us.
Yeah, yeah, great. Let's take a quick call from Joe from Wyandotte. I'm sure he's got a question for you, Patrick. Okay. Joe, go ahead.
Well, not really a question, but I guess a leading comment. But first, your comparing this with education is absolutely spot on appropriate. There are too many bad politicians that think you can just continue to throw money at things like unions in particular, like education, and expect things to get better. And it never happens. The roads are going to be the same way. You can't just throw money at it and expect it to get better. We need to look at improving the way we do things, like Patrick says. But my main thing is all these add-ons and special interests. And the one I wanted to key on was, and I'm a bit sympathetic, is to the local governments having had some of their monies cut. You know, that's the way things are supposed to work. The things closest to the people, if the local governments need more money, it's up to them to beg their citizens for tax increases to meet their operating budgets, not steal more and more from the entire state and redistribute the wealth.
Yeah, yeah.
I couldn't agree more. And when we talk about some of the alternatives that I proposed to Proposal 15-1, I deliberately go off and protect local units of government and their spending and the appropriations for them for specifically that reason. I look at the growth of, you can take a little satellite photo of Lansing from just 50 years, and you can see the growth of the Capitol complex, just like you can see the growth of the D.C. complex, if you will, if you look at Washington, D.C., and they're growing gangbusters. Meanwhile, the ones who are forced to pinch their pennies are the folks in the local units of government. So I agree wholeheartedly.
Yeah, and this whole thing with teachers' pay. I'm sorry, you do not deserve more than a cop or a firefighter who puts his life on the line 365 days a year when you work part-time. And that's all a teacher job is part-time.
Yeah, there's a lot of good teachers that are in it for the right reason. I want to protect them in the discussion on it, but I know a lot of good folks that are doing it for the right reason. And those, man, I want to celebrate them every time I see them. And they're not in it for the money like that the head of the Wayne County MEA talked about. They're in it to make sure we got good citizens coming out of the education system. But we definitely do need to focus on, that's why we repealed teacher tenure, was kind of along those lines. We want to make sure that we're rewarding for performance, not for longevity, for example. We got a lot of work still to do there.
I've been negative, so let me say one thing positive. I will agree with the governor in retiring some of the past road repair debt.
Yeah.
Into the future, reducing that debt now reduces the interest, allows us to put that money to the roads. So, but there are still too many special interest, different monies, even money to the general fund. We need to be cutting general fund monies, not raising it to give them more of a slush fund.
Graham.
Yeah, we pay about $200 million a year just in interest payments on our road bonds. So yeah, I agree that it's something that's got to be addressed. But the one thing we have to have in the discussion is if we're making a big case out of the need for fixing the roads right away because of safety and we got concrete falling through people's windshields, which, by the way, just so you know, that occurred back in 2005, that incident. What are you seeing on the
television right
now? Yeah, we couldn't find anything more recent, apparently. But I want to make sure that we understand that the priority should be to fixing the roads that we got right now. And I still want to pay down that road debt, but let's tilt the wheel a little bit more towards the immediate fix as opposed to fixing the bond debt.
Yeah. Joe, thanks for the comments. Great call. So, let's jump in. We've got a couple minutes here, so before the half-hour bell here rings, let's talk about health care. Pat, you got it?
Before we jump off into health care, if you mind, I'll just there's a mantra that's out there that says there are no alternatives to Proposal 15-1.
Mm-hmm.
I'll take a cue from Representative Gary Glenn. Not only is there a Plan B, but there's a Plan C, D, E, F, G, H, I. If you want to find out more information on the plans that I put out there, which is essentially collecting all the information from other legislators and constituents in the district and throughout the state, go to morninginmichigan.com. And I've got a little place there called Solution Center. Just delve into it and you can get more information on it. Bottom line is I believe we can put about double the amount of money into the roads in year one that the proposal would put into it without raising taxes.
Yeah, it's awesome.
And so it takes a lot of work. I've got a lot of detailed spreadsheets behind the scenes on it, and we're pretty confident.
And Patrick, you're hosting a transportation forum coming up in April 26th, 27th.
April 27th at Northfield Township Hall, starting at 7:00, and you can find out more information on that also at morninginmichigan.com.
Is that Northville or Northfield?
Northville Township.
Northville. Okay.
Yep.
And it's senatorpatrickkolbeck.com. Also.
Yep. Since nobody knows how to spell Colbeck, usually we came up with Morning in Michigan. As long as they're not depressed and they spell it Mourning, we're usually pretty good.
I'll be in Morning if this proposal passes in May. I can assure you of that. Okay.
Are there any polls showing its chances of passing?
I have not seen any official polls out, but the people that I talk to, every one of them have been against it so far.
Yeah, you can guarantee that if polls were going well, you'd be hearing about it in the media right now.
Yeah, yeah. I think this one, as long as we don't let our guard down and get people, because what really worries me is this is a special election. It's May. People aren't thinking about it. There's no presidential election. There's no two-year off-cycle election going on. This is a special interest election, and the people that will come out will be the people benefiting. It'll be the unions.
Yeah, and after a hard winter and the weather's starting to get nice, people don't want to go stand in line, and even though the lines aren't ever long for these types of elections.
Right.
And something to keep in mind is that the proponents of Proposal 1 have put in over $500,000 into data mining on prospective voters. So they're going to make sure that the voters that are going to be so inclined to yes are going to get out to the polls. So no, but the folks that are opposed to that ballot proposal cannot sit on the fence. They got to get out there and vote.
Okay. Now, we're going into a break here shortly. Do you have time to stay for a few minutes, and we'll talk about the health care, and then we'll unlock the door and let you out of here. we've had poor Senator Patrick in here locked in with us. So we'll see you guys on the other side of the break. 734-822-1600. Call in and give us your opinion.
This is the Blaze Radio News. I'm Kay Long. Chaos and terror at the Armstrong Airport in New Orleans when a man armed with a machete and wasp spray goes after TSA workers. Traveler Ron Hicks telling New Orleans station WWL-TV he's in line right in front of the attacker.
What he did was raised his, he had like a 3-foot machete, and he raised that up and was running through, and he was, wasn't after people, he was after the agents, it looked like to me, because that's all who he went towards, and he went around and attacked the agent. Now, I didn't see her get cut or whatever, but I later heard she had. But I saw her then backing up and firing 3 times, and he just fell over on his face.
The machete attacker identified as Richard White. He's in the hospital. The motive for that attack not known. The U.S. reportedly pulling its last Special Forces unit from Yemen. CNN saying about 100 Special Forces troops evacuated because of the deteriorating security situation in that country. The U.S. closing its embassy in Yemen's capital after rebels take over control of the city last month. On Friday, ISIS terrorists claiming responsibility for bombing attacks on 2 mosques in Yemen, killing more than 130 people, injuring hundreds more. A tragic story out of New York, the Blaze Radio's Brad James with the details.
7 children, ages 5 to 15, are dead after a fire trapped them inside their Brooklyn home. The children's mother and one surviving child are in critical condition in the hospital. Witnesses heard the mother screaming for someone to help rescue her children after she jumped from a window, an electric hot plate in the kitchen starting the fire.
Will he run in 2016? Texas Republican Senator Ted Cruz's handlers telling the media he's making what they call an important speech Monday at Liberty University in Virginia. No details as yet. This is news on the Blaze Radio Network. Truth lives here.
It's time now for Wham! Talk 1600's Community Calendar with Brandon Drake.
Hop to it. Adopt a real Florida manatee with a known history this Easter from Save the Manatee Club. Each tax-deductible gift adoption costs $25 and includes a color photo biography and adoption certificate of an endangered Florida manatee. Or for $35, also receive a free 8-inch plush manatee. There are 35 real live manatees up for adoption. The ultimate addition to any Easter gift basket. When you adopt, you help protect the manatees and their habitat. Call toll free at 800-432-JOIN or visit SaveTheManatee.org. The Livingston Fine Art Association presents the 25th Annual Juried Fine Art Show, April 10th, 11th, and 12th at the Howell High School Commons. The show is held in the Howell High School Commons during the Livingston County Home and Garden Show. The Commons is adjacent to the cafeteria where the Taste of Livingston will be held on Saturday, April 11th. This is an all-media show featuring about 30 artists displaying their work, which will be for sale. More information may be found at livingstonfineart.com. The second annual Run, Walk, and Roll to raise money for a barrier-free, boundless playground for Washtenaw Intermediate School District will take place on Saturday, April 18th. Register at 7:45 and begin at 9 a.m. The cost is $25 to $30. There will be a 5K run and walk and a 1 mile fun run, walk or roll. It'll take place at High Point School, 1735 South Wagner Road in Ann Arbor. For more information, call 734-944-8100, extension 1541.
You've been listening to the Wham! Community Calendar. To have your event publicized, email community at whamradio.com or write to Brandon Drake, COWAAM, 4230 Packard Road, Ann Arbor, 48108.
Drifting, this rock got to roll. So I hit the road and made my getaway.
And welcome back. Thank you for tuning in to catch another edition of The Drift. Joining me in studio, Brandon Drake.
I like to shake up a little bit with that bump music.
That came from Joe from West Brighton brought that to my attention last night. So there we go. Saw Neil Diamond last night.
Oh, yeah?
It was good. Joining us in studio, State Senator Patrick Colbeck.
Yeah, and I'm forever in blue jeans right now.
Yeah. Okay, so we wanted to touch base on health, and you had a segue from the bill, the proposal one, into that. Let's roll with that.
Yeah, because in the alternatives that you can break them out into a series of alternatives. One is make sure all the gas tax you collect at the pump go to the roads. The second one is the money that you already collect, make sure you prioritize it to put the roads up in the priority. And the last area is expense reductions, and not only expense reductions like building roads that last longer so you don't have to raise as much money to maintain the roads, but looking at expense reductions in other department areas. And one of those key areas is in the area of healthcare. And we spend about...
Wait a minute. Expense reductions? Are we now speaking Chinese? I've never heard this language before.
Yeah.
From a politician.
It's called saving money.
What is going on?
Yeah. Yeah, families do this thing all the time, I understand. My wife and I always try to find the cheapest cable bill that we can get, the cheapest cell phone contract we can get, but I'm not convinced state government likes to find the best way of going off and reducing expenses. And so I started looking at what are the different areas we can go off and pinch pennies, but actually provide better quality services in many cases. And the best opportunity for that is around healthcare. We spend about $1.5 billion a year on state employees and retirees on their healthcare. And there's a patient-centered care solution that I developed, which exploits a free market loophole in the Affordable Care Act that could save 20% off of that, and not just 20% for a state, but also 20% for employers throughout the state if it was fully, you know, if we had expanded the footprint of direct primary care service providers. And if you start looking at other budget areas like the Medicaid budget, which is about $14 billion and growing in the state of Michigan, you can actually get a 50% savings, and they validated this with the deployment of this solution or elements of it.
So that's $7 billion you could save.
That's $7 billion. That's
over 1 year?
That's every year.
So we could say, and again, we talked about this during the break. You come up with these plans, and the leadership in Lansing just blows you off. They're not interested in doing it. They want to do something. They're
It'll
not interested
work.
In saving us $7 billion. Imagine if we had $7 billion to put into the roads right now.
Yeah. Well, it's not some of it's federal money, so it's a 40-60 match, so 40% of it comes from state resources, so that's about $2.8 billion. And so even if we can't get that kind of savings across all the different Medicaid populations that we have to serve, maybe it's more expensive for nursing home population or something along those lines, even if we can't get all that, if we were just to get 50% of that prospective savings, that's $1.4 billion, which is more than the $1.2 billion that's being used as our target for increased road funding.
Right. And so, by the way, what happened to the $1.2 billion surplus we were talking? Was that last year we were talking about?
Yeah, what happened?
Well, that went to the bridge.
Yeah. our government's been expanding to absorb that. Nature abhors a vacuum. So instead of giving it back to taxpayers, the government's consistently been expanding.
Yeah, I thought to myself at the time, put it toward the road. It's $1.2 billion. It's not maybe everything you want, but it was a pretty good chunk.
Yeah, but with all this government expansion, don't you feel just more, you know, better as a human being? I mean, all the benefits that have flowed your way? Do you feel more enhanced?
You know, I'm one of those guys.
Do you feel more vibrant?
I don't, because you know what? I get, other than the roads I drive on, which I pay through the gas tax, I guess, I get nothing from the government. They give me nothing. I'll pay for the military any day, all of it. But I just don't get it. But let's take a quick call from Don in Ann Arbor. I want to talk about the roads. Don, go ahead.
Yes, Senator Colbeck. I have a plan B, and that is going back to the 20s before the union movement took over in this state and FDR was president. We had the convicts at Jackson Prison rebuild the roads for nothing. Except the cost of materials. And that is illustrated with Brooklyn, Michigan's Main Street downtown and sections of U.S. 12, the turnpike going to Chicago, which was a major tourist road even then, and they were built, rebuilt by convict labor at no cost to the state taxpayers because we're already paying for them, you know? So my suggestion is using... an accountant's term, we're looking for the ROI, that stands for return on investment, that we should get from the prison labor that we already pay for all their needs, housing, clothing, food, medical, and this would be job training.
Cable TV, weights.
Yeah, internet, legal, education, whatever we do. Yeah, great point, Don, great point. Anything else?
Well, actually, I made a report on it, and... right now, Earl Pulaski from Jackson, Representative Pulaski, has that presentation, and I'd be more than happy to bring it to your office and show you in the detail with photos and all that. But the fact of the matter is this state has a legacy of paying our legislatures to figure out these problems before we were even born, and they did, and they did a good job, and that road work is still in place in Brooklyn, Michigan, Jackson County, and on Highway 12 there. And what I'm saying is we paid those legislatures to do the best they could back in 1926, and they did, and those roads are still there, and they're still serving the people, and we haven't paid to rebuild them since. In fact, we didn't pay to rebuild them back then because they got the labor out of the convict population of Jackson Prison.
Yeah, great.
So that's Plan B as far as I'm concerned.
I'd definitely like to see the data on that. So you can, if you go to my website, you can contact us there, and if you can send it over to us or set up a meeting, I'd be glad to talk to you about it.
Yeah, Don, do you have the ability to email?
I do not. I'm sorry.
Okay. Or you can bring it to the transportation forum that Patrick Kolbeck is hosting too.
Yeah, there you go. Don, why don't you leave your phone number with Derek, and and we'll make arrangements to somehow get that information from you. Okay, I'm going to put you on hold.
Sounds great.
Don't hang up.
Let me on.
All righty. Well, there you go. I mean, we used to think about that, but is that like so politically incorrect now that we would put chains on them and put them out on the
street? Well, you know, a lot of convicts would maybe want to do it.
Get
out of the prison. Yeah. A lot of reasons and incentives that wouldn't cost the taxpayer any extra money because you see them out there, you know, picking up trash and stuff like that. I think a lot of them volunteer and want to do that.
Yeah. Well, I would assume, Patrick, we've talked before that, you know what, you get these guys that are in jail for marijuana possession or whatever. They're obviously not particularly dangerous. So maybe those kind of guys you could let out and take the chance of having them work outside the prison walls.
Yeah.
Obviously, you don't want the murderers and the
You don't want the level 4 or level 5 guys getting out, but level 1, level 2, level 3.
Something to think about, but obviously...
Well, see, that's where drones come in. The drones kind of patrol from above. One tries to run off. Hey, practice.
How about we just tether a drone to each prisoner?
Alrighty.
Never mind.
Okay, Drake.
No, I think you're right, though, Gary. There's been such a cultural mindset shift that, like, oh, are you crazy? You can't do something like that. But it makes total sense.
Yeah, too many people were shocked by Cool Hand Luke.
So. Yeah.
We do have a lot of failures to communicate up in Lansing sometimes, so I understand that.
We got Terrence wants to make a statement here about health care. Terrence from Fowlerbell, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you. I just wanted to comment. I know you were going to get on the discussion of health care in this country, not just in this state, with especially with the Affordable Health Care Act. Now, you know, prior to Obama, you know, all other presidents, all the way farther back than Truman, talked about doing something about not just the runaway cost of health care, but the delivery of health care in this country. Now, we're paying double, triple, quadruple what other first world nations pay for health care. Now, I find it amazing that, you know, we've got a health care act that probably wouldn't have passed if there was a Republican Congress, seriously. Now, all the president did was grab a plan that was already up and running in Massachusetts, implemented by Romney. And there's nothing anatomically different about people from Massachusetts than anybody else in the country. Now, who hasn't gone away is the insurance companies. I'll remind you of the CEO. He's making so much money, he's building a zoo in his backyard. The pharmaceutical industry hasn't gone away. Biggest dope dealers on the planet. And the AMA, the American Medical, far off of their oath now, aren't they? The AHA, genius ways of, you know, coming up with charges to, you know, bilk the insurance companies. Now, none of these entities have gone away, all right? But it's pretty clear that America and our health care system, I don't care before or after the Affordable Health Care Act. If you had something before, well, I hope nothing catastrophic happened to you because you find out just how pitiful the health care was because they had ingenious ways of denying you coverage. Now, these entities are still in play, and I'll remind you that the largest room in the world is the room for improvement. Now, what bummed me out, the biggest thing that bummed me out about the whole discussion of improving health care in this country was they never talked about the advancements in technologies. I mean, we're mapping human DNA as we speak. We've got nanotechnology. You can literally put a robot in a syringe and send it throughout your bloodstream. Now, these technologies won't stop. Okay, so we're only going to get better at it. And so, therefore, you just got to ask the basic, simple question, well, who should profit from this? Now, our system is based on greed. It's clear in reference to other first world nations that get it done a whole lot cheaper than America.
Yeah, well, let me ask you this, though, Terrence. So what is the one thing that you would like to see included in healthcare legislation to improve the system? One thing.
Well, I would like to see a checks and balances on what it is procedures are and how necessary these procedures are. And don't forget, we stay on this road long enough. You know, we're going to tackle tort reform as we should.
Well, there you go. I think you're getting to the tort reform, and that's it. Great, great points. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it, Terrence. Great points. Tort reform. He's talking about procedures. Do you need them or not? Well, a lot of doctors, right, are prescribing different procedures and different testing because they're scared to death of being
right.
sued.
Defensive medicine.
And he brings up a lot of probably good points that we could probably have a 3-hour, 4-hour show on and have a full discussion. But when he keeps comparing us to other so-called first world nations, you know, is he talking about Western Europe and Canada? You know, why are so many Canadians coming here to have their lives saved? So, you know, maybe they're spending less, but is their system necessarily that much better than ours as far as patient care?
Well, he hit on some really good points in regards to looking at the expenses and how we can improve the delivery of healthcare and the healthcare delivery model. That's one of the facets of that patient-centered care solution that I put out, and you build it around this direct primary care service model, which involves no third-party payer. So all that overhead and administration that goes into a typical physician practice, you get that out of the mix, and you just focus on a direct relationship between the doctor and the patient. That's for primary care services. A lot of the other stuff that he was talking about that still fits into the catastrophic care model, and you can get high-deductible health plans for when things really go bump in the night. But what they did instead of taking that approach, that common-sense approach where we try to lower the cost of healthcare for everybody, is that they implemented this Affordable Care Act, which is putting about $1.5 trillion in additional spending to insure about 19 million more Americans. That works out to about $71,000 per American. And I can tell you, I can get a pretty good healthcare plan for about $5,000 and cover my bases on that. So it kind of highlights the fact that the purpose is this was not affordable care. It was not even taking care of people. It was about control since day one.
Yeah, I mean, that's some of the most basic things that could have been put into the Affordable Care Act, they ignored.
Right.
And again, it was because of the special interests and the lobbyists with the big red L, right, doing what they always wanted.
Which is what the caller was talking about.
Yeah.
Well, actually, one of those lobbyists, though, did a good thing because it was a late-night amendment into Section 10,104 of the Affordable Care Act that allowed for these direct primary care services. So there's a free market loophole embedded within it, and it's part of what I like to call an exploit then repeal strategy on healthcare. It's find the stuff that actually works inside the healthcare law, which pretty much boils down to this one section, and it's that section 10,104 that allows these direct primary care service agreements, drive a Mack truck through that loophole. And so by the time we get a president that is willing to go off and repeal this onerous legislation, the impact on the on our patients and on our citizens will be a pinprick. And instead of all the drama we had to go through when they were rolling this thing out, with all the uncertainty for people that are undergoing long-term care right now, the folks that were told that if they like their insurance, they can keep their insurance. If they like their doctor, they can keep their doctor. We all know that they're all lies now. And with this approach, with the exploit then repeal, they would actually be able to keep their doctor and move on and still have the care that they need when we do the full repeal. So the only people impacted on a full repeal then are the bureaucrats.
Right. So on this show, we always like to get our listeners involved. And once again, I'm going to tell our listeners, call your state representative, call your state senator, and tell them to do one thing. Go talk to Patrick Colbeck. Stop ignoring him. Go talk to Patrick Colbeck, or I'm going to actively campaign against you. Because you know what? There's only one, well, there's not just one, but there's one guy who's in our area, and that's Patrick Colbeck, who is making these common sense statements. We say it all the time. This is common sense radio here at The Drift. Use some common sense in Lansing. For crying out loud, it's not brain surgery. It's common sense. Do the things that save us money, stop spending money, and stop taxing us to death. insane.
Yeah, the fundamental question is whose pennies should be pinched? Should it be the taxpayers or should it be the folks up in Lansing? And I think we need to start pinching our pennies in government.
Yeah. All right. Well, I was going to run into a break, but I don't know that there's not enough time to really do that. Was there anything else, Patrick, that you wanted to hit on before?
Well, just want to highlight.
Let you escape.
If you go to the website at morninginmichigan.com, you can find not only the road funding alternative, but also the healthcare, free market healthcare reform strategy. You can find a lot of data around, you know, comparing how much we spend on our roads here in Michigan compared to other states. So it's the quality of the roads that we get out as a result. There's a whole bunch of data sitting up there, so check that out. And I also encourage you to join us at our healthcare forum out in Northville Township Hall on March 30th at 7 p.m. You're welcome to join us on that. We're going to talk about healthcare strategies and then on April 27th, we're going to go back to the Township Hall up in Northville and talk about the roads. And we're going to have members, the head of the Concrete Pavement Association with us. He's going to be joining us, so we're going to try to make sure we have a balanced discussion and get all viewpoints heard. So that, once again, is at 7 o'clock on the 27th of April.
Now, how are we sitting on prevailing wage? Are we still paying federal prevailing wage on all these road projects?
Yeah, anytime you're using federal dollars to fund a road, you're subject to Davis-Bacon Act, which is it's kind of a racist policy in the first place. If you go back to its history, it's kind of sad on what they did. They tried to block out minorities from competing with the unions on road contracts, and the fact that prevailing wage is still out there is a shame, frankly. But yeah, and so we're, for road contractors, we're always going to be subject to federal regulations, and one of those federal regulations and are due to the Davis-Bacon Act.
Okay, so anything there's federal funding on, we're our hands are tied.
Exactly.
Okay.
What we do is, to add on to what the caller said about convicts fixing the roads, okay, we take them, so there's your labor pool. We add on the teachers that are taking the summer off, because we're still paying them. We get them out there in the mix. And then also these Teamsters and other union groups that are collecting unemployment because there's not a movie going on right now, that they're also raping the taxpayer.
Great. I'm going to have a lot of nice phone calls, too. Eh?
Hey, the truth hurts, people.
Let's hit film subsidies while we got time. We got some time. Knocked it down. Didn't get rid of them completely.
No.
But we're down to 50 million, or is it less than that now?
No, it's less. I think they were talking about reducing it by about 11 million, and there's a total of 50 million allocated to it, 25 million and ongoing, 25 million in quote unquote one time that seems to be repeated every single year. And just so you know, for rule of thumb for everybody, whenever you see a dollar figure for a program that you're not supporting, like for me, it's film incentives. It's about $1 million a mile. So we could fix, for $50 million we're putting on into the film incentives, we could fix 50 miles of road every single year.
Wow. Yeah, that's a big chunk of road.
Yeah, the whole film incentive thing, that's one pet peeve I have that just really outrages me because of what it's really about. It's not about just, oh, these great jobs are being provided. No,
yeah,
the taxpayer.
And I both have friends who work in that industry, and let me assure you, they've both told us that they sit around, they get paid ungodly amounts of money, they don't work, you know, you could
and
probably
overtime
hire,
sitting around, and they're totally shameless about it. And if you try to have a discussion with them, oh, look out.
Yeah, it's that entitlement mentality,
yes,
without a doubt.
That you can't pierce.
Now, one of the things I remember seeing at Mackinac Center, they had a graph out, and I wish I could pull it up, but I can't, that showed film industry jobs in Michigan actually went
down. They lost jobs.
Down.
Yeah.
In the last few years, despite the fact that we had money being spent. How does that work out?
Yeah, not very well for the taxpayer. And this is getting into that picking winners and losers. I'm a strong believer that the state of Michigan should not be in the business of playing venture capitalist. When we start talking about MEDC in those areas, I don't think we should be providing grants or loans out to specific companies. I do believe that we should have somebody answering the phones when some business wants to relocate to Michigan. So I think there is a lead management role that we should play at the state level around economic development. But the idea of parsing out taxpayer money and essentially putting money down on specific businesses that they want to invest in, like Solyndra and A123 battery systems, that kind of stuff, that's not a good deal for the taxpayers.
I saw the commercial recently, and I'm not sure if it was pro or con because I wasn't quite paying attention about green energy here in Michigan.
Yeah.
Now, we may be effectively losing some of our coal plants due to EPA rules or regulations.
Yeah.
And I got to ask, when they talk about windmills, every time I drive up 127, and you've got all those windmills up there, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're big, and they're kind of cool looking. On the windiest, the last time we drove up, it was windy as all get out. And maybe 10% of them were actually spinning. What is going on with those windmills? Are they, do they take forever to get online after they're built? Are they broken? Are they turned off for a reason?
I don't know how to spin that one.
See, what you don't understand is those windmills, they actually run on gasoline.
Yeah, I can't say.
I literally, after I got over my surprise and shock, it began to twist in my mind, and it hasn't gone away. I keep seeing these big windmills stock still in a 20 to 30 mile an hour breeze. Well, maybe it was too windy. I don't know.
Yeah, it could be. There are cases where it does shut down when it gets into too high a wind, and they have governors.
That's the last three times I drove up north. I saw that, and I thought to myself, what is the point of spending all that money on these big, and some people think they're ugly. I think
that's why you don't want government in the middle. The free market has a way of separating the kitties off, the street on this stuff. So if it's not paying off and it's not paying dividends, they get rid of it. But in government, for some reason, less it makes sense, sometimes the more we promote it. So we got to get out of that business.
Any moves about fracking in Lansing?
No, I'm just nothing to discourage it right now. I don't think you're going to get anything that's going to discourage that practice at the current mix-up of the legislature. I think the big push you're going to see on the energy front is talking about choice. And it's going to be, there's one proposal that's out there to go off and essentially get rid of all choice and actually have energy as a public utility that's even more so than it is right now, which is 90% public utility. And get it to, so we got this competing battle over, should we lift the control altogether on the supply of electricity and make it a completely free market?
So just
basis.
Deregulate it.
Yeah, and so that's where the big battle is right now on energy.
Yeah, I did notice that it's this company called ITC seemed to have sprung up a few years back, and now their trucks are everywhere, and they actually own the power lines?
They're the distribution lines. Now, it makes sense that you kind of want to have one distribution line throughout the state on it.
Okay.
I can make the case for that because it requires rights of way and roads, and there's limited real estate. Just like limited bandwidth for a broadcast station, like a radio broadcast station, you got to make sure you're not tripping over each other with the broadcast frequency. Same thing happens in regards to distribution lines. You can't have multiple sewer systems and water systems, for example.
Right.
So it starts making more sense to consolidate some of that. But when you come and talk about individual power generation sources to push electricity into the system, you can open that up a lot more than we are right now.
Good. Well, Senator Patrick Colbeck, thank you so much for coming in and spending the hour with us. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Gary.
Until next week, go to thedailydrift.com.
Hey, thanks.
Good seeing y'all.
We'll see you.
Take care.